Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 94-year-old K.O. Leach of Madera, California. A lifelong farmer, he would become a pilot. He trapped coyotes for the federal government. He's done a lot of things, but first he had to make it through World War II. He and his younger brother, Gerald, both served in the Navy during the war. Their father had been an Army man. Did he ever tell you guys what he did in World War I?
No.
Didn't talk about it?
No, he wouldn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. His brother was with him. His brother died, pneumonia. And the conditions were so bad, Dad told me, don't get in the Army. He said, I slept in the mud. I slept in hog water, stretched up between trees to keep from sleeping in the mud and getting the bugs on me. He said, it's hell. It's hell. Don't get in the Army. Get in the Navy.
And just to be clear on your uncle, who died in World War I, was that while he was he overseas when he
yes.
got pneumonia?
Yes. Okay.
So he was in Europe.
Yes.
He and your father both. He wasn't shot and killed, but he died from pneumonia because of exposure.
Yeah, that was the trouble, yeah. Exposure. That's what most of them died from.
So your father was very emphatic, don't go in the Army because of his experience.
Well, yeah. So I listened to that. I got out of boot camp, Farragut, Idaho, after 3 months. Big lake there to train sailor. My mother, I don't know how she got a ticket on a train. She got a ticket to Idaho to come see how I was.
Huh.
And she got a hotel room, and they told me to ask my commander if I could go visit her. Yeah, you can go so stay all night with your mother. And she had my little brother, Bud. He was 10 years old now. And that woman come up to Idaho.
I'm sure the other guys in boot camp had some fun with that. Did you get teased a little bit about mommy coming to see you?
Yeah, you're not a kid. Were you in the service?
No, but I can imagine.
I started to say, you sound just like a boy.
Well, and
that's a good place to grow up. I'm not kidding you.
What did they do to you? How did they whip you into shape?
Marching every day, climbing over obstacles, running. When I come back to Frisco, a lieutenant walked up to me in Frisco on Treasure Island, tapped me on the shoulder, are you Kenneth Leach? Turned around and I saw a lieutenant, yes, sir. He said, what do you want to do in the Navy? I said, well, sir, I don't know. I'll do whatever there is to do. Be a boatswain, do whatever. Oh, no, you don't want to be no boatswain. He said, I've got your high school record. That principal gave me straight A's except a minus on algebra, minus A, but it still was an A. And he said, I saw you took typing. Yes, I did take it. He said, how much did you score? I said, I went the limit, 45 words a minute. Oh, that's what the Navy does. You want to be a radioman? I said, well, yeah, I'd like that. Okay, I'll send you to radio school. That's what he did. They had a school right there,
uh-huh.
Treasure Island. First of all, they run the code.
Morse code?
Morse code. They run it by you day after day after day till you learn every single thing about it. How to send it, how to receive it. In the Navy, you couldn't make a mistake on the radio. It was usually fatal. But I learned that, and I never made a mistake. 2 years on that radio, never made a mistake because I positioned myself. We had 4 hours on the earphones, typewriter, 4 hours off, then go back again for another four for 8 hours a day.
The four-hour shifts. Yeah.
You can't sit on your rear end any longer than that. It burns it up. See, we had a place where there's four, five, six big radio receivers.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the Chicago Cubs. Roosevelt said, I'm not going to ban the series. We listened to it on the radio. We tuned in Honolulu.
I bet you had a few guys huddled around the radio for that, huh?
We had a whole bunch of them. Everybody that wasn't asleep was up there.
Tell me about when you got assigned to your ship. So you were only on one ship, right? The Bristol?
Yeah, yes. DD-857.
DD-857. You've got some pictures of it on the wall. I even saw the route that you took around the Pacific on one of those.
7,000 miles from Frisco to Tokyo.
What was your first impression of the Bristol, and did you understand what the role of a destroyer really was?
Yes, we knew. See, they told us the battleship and the oil tanker and the aircraft carrier can't leave the port because they can't field subs. If they found a sub, had subs, it takes 40 acres for a battleship to turn around. Oil tanker, aircraft carrier the same way. So we had to go with them. Whenever they went, we went right alongside. I've been in some typhoons you wouldn't believe.
I want to hear about it. But as far as first getting aboard this ship, and this is the second Bristol of World War II because the first one was sunk.
Yeah.
So now they've got another one that's carrying that name.
Yes, that's right.
What was life like on that destroyer, and how'd you get along with all the other sailors aboard?
I made a friend with a semaphore boy. He did semaphore, I did code.
So he's communicating with the flags, and you're communicating through the code. All right.
He could just as much as I could, and I never understood that they didn't use them more.
Mm.
But one day, I just got off the radio, and I went up to see him. He was semaphore to shore. There's a little door that opens in the sea cabin of the captain. He was in it. We didn't know it. He was on his bunk resting. The semaphore guy says, "Where are we going?" And I had read the heading. I could read the heading of a message sent to our ship. I could read it. Who went to, who'd send it, and what it probably meant. "Where are we going, Leach?" I'm standing here by this cabin. I said, "We're going to Tokyo." I went on back down in the radio shack. Captain come running down the stairs yelling, "This has got to quit. This has got to quit." "What's got to quit?" I was in my cabin and two seamen talking and told me where we're going to have to go. And when I read the message, that's what it said. Go to Tokyo. It's got to quit. It's got to stop.
He didn't want to head that way?
He'd lost one ship in Sicily when they went back to Sicily out of North Africa. He lost his ship there. They sunk it. And he was, of course, you know, if you had a ship, there's nothing that'll make you feel as bad. In Frisco, Treasure Islands, where they bought the guys that survived sunken ships, you never saw such pitiful things. Their eyes, depression, they didn't know what was going on, they didn't know where they were, they didn't know what they'd been, they just didn't know any, they didn't have anything but the clothes on their back.
So even before you went overseas, you're there at Treasure Island, and you see these guys coming back.
That
can't be very encouraging.
No, well, it wasn't, but I knew where I was going. I knew where I was going.
And I didn't want to cut you off there when you were talking about the sailors who came back from ships that had been lost. Did you interact with those guys at all, or you just saw them walking by?
Well, most of them had to have psychotherapy. You know, they had to get back on track. I mean, boy, I want to tell you, we picked up, off the aircraft carriers, we picked up 10 pilots, those old putt-putt, one-engine, single-wing airplanes would go at 7 o'clock every morning, bomb Tokyo, but they couldn't get off the carrier. They'd get off, but they'd go in the water. And when a man goes in the water, the plane sinks. You can't see anything but his head. He's got a jacket on. I seen with my own eyes 10 of them die. 10 of them died.
That you guys were trying to save?
We tried to save them. We couldn't. We got one to the ship.
And these were guys who had been shot down or ran out of gas, or these were guys who had problems on...
No, they were taken off to go bomb Tokyo.
So they had trouble on takeoff.
Had bomb underneath the wheels. Too much weight. They'd go off that aircraft carrier, go down and touch the water, and if they got lucky, they'd go on up. They had plenty of them that went to bomb. They had plenty of them go.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know many aircraft carriers would, but ours lost 10 men.
What were you thinking when you headed overseas? Did you have any concern that you might not make it back?
Well, we went into San Francisco Bay. We went down to San Diego, went on a cruise down Mexico way, down south, come back to San Diego. Our ship was put together in San Pedro. When I got on it, it had cables around it, demagnifying it, so it won't attract bombs. I got on it, had to walk over cables. Then it come time to go to get arms, so they sent us to San Francisco to get ammunition for the guns. And that night, off the Farallon Islands, we went through the biggest tornado, they called them, that I ever seen or heard of. I was holding on to that ship made out of iron. It'd go up like this, that wave would go out. It'd hit the bottom. I could feel that iron in my hand. It scared the living daylights out of me. I thought we was going to sink.
So this is just outside of San Francisco, the Farallons. You're coming back into the bay, but you almost don't make it because
we didn't make it. We left. We didn't try. You go back to sea. Get away.
Mm-hmm.
Get away from shore.
So that caught your attention, huh?
Next day, next morning, it was calm. We loaded ammunition all one day from a barge in the middle of San Francisco Bay. So if it exploded, it didn't kill anybody on shore. It took us all day long to load ammunition. The next morning, we left San Francisco Bay, and my thoughts were there was a flag flying on the bridge across San Francisco Bay.
The Golden Gate Bridge, they had a flag hanging on it?
Yeah, with a pole and where the ship went under, flying, "Goodbye, old friend." And I was crying, "I hope to see you again. Goodbye." And I made it. I almost didn't, but I did.
Well, it sounds like in that moment you weren't so sure whether you
would or not. I wasn't sure at all, because they had the Philippines just swarmed all over it, had them kill 2,000 men on a march to get them out of the Philippines. MacArthur had to go to Australia, take his family. He couldn't stay in Manila. I saw him when he come back. He waded back in the water like he waded out. 18 years old, off the farm, never away from home. It kind of got to you. But our motto was, whatever it takes, we're ready to go. And I'd go again today if I wasn't 94 years old.
If he says it, we better believe it. It's break time, but there's much more to come with 94-year-old Navy veteran K.O. Leach. Perhaps the closest call he experienced in World War II had nothing to do with the enemy, but his mother's prayers are a part of that story. And you're not going to believe the makeshift weapons he witnessed his shipmates using after the Japanese surrendered. You may have eaten one of those weapons today. We're also going to hear briefly from his grandson, who is carrying on that Navy legacy now. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.